Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. Joining me in the studio now is Amardeep Kaleka, who is an Emmy Award-winning film director who, following his father's murder in the Wisconsin Sikh temple shooting of 2012, became involved in gun control and new legislation to reduce hate crimes. He is running for the United States House of Representatives in Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District to unseat Representative Paul Ryan. Welcome to Background Briefing, Amardeep Kaleka.
Thank you, Ian, for having me.
And, of course, your father was slain at the Oak Creek Temple in Wisconsin, and along with five others of his congregation, in a mass shooting by a white supremacist on August the 12th of 2012. And also, this white supremacist, when the police arrived, he shot a police officer 15 times. He survived, I take it, the policeman.
He did. Lieutenant Brian Murphy survived, and my father had a hard-fought battle with the gunman with a little bit of a fruit knife, and he fought him off, and the gunman left immediately after that battle and didn't shoot anybody else except for Lieutenant Brian Murphy and then himself.
So, in effect, your father's probably saved the lives of a lot of congregants, right?
We think so. We hope so.
Right. But since then, we've had other mass shootings. Of course, this is the one-year anniversary of the Newtown School massacre. It must be hard for you to get your head around the idea of why does this keep happening? And in spite of the outpourings of anguish every time it happens, the whole nation is outraged, and yet nothing is done. So what's your understanding of that disconnect?
Well, it's complex. Immediately following August 5th, I went into intense meditation and thinking about this process, and then Sandy Hook happened, and we were asked to come out there and then be part of a coalition of survivors from Columbine, Virginia Tech, Sandy Hook, all our friends now, and we've become a family that most often you don't want to have a family like that. We always say it's the family you don't want to have. But over the past year now, we've done a documentary called Peacemakers, where we follow each of these people from these different tragedies, and we allow them to analyze why America has become so insanely violent. And the violence is different. It's not bred from just economic disparity. Like in these situations in America where we're a highly developed nation, it's bred on hate. On racism, on hate, on classism, on, you know, conspiracy theories gone wrong, whatever the case
right.
may be.
Well, of course, and conspiracy theories exist on both the left and the right. And this idiot shooter, the white supremacist, thought that somehow because Sikhs wear turbans, they were, what, the Ayatollah or something? What can you figure out there? But wasn't
I can give you a couple of things. He was a former Army sergeant, was let go. So I think he did know the difference between Muslims and Sikhs. But there is that cross discrepancy or, you know, maybe he was confused, but I think he was trying to start a race war. That's essentially what his lyrics and his music state.
I see.
And he thought to himself, well, let's attack the Sikhs because they're so militant and they've fought in so many gallant, you know, or they fought gallantly in so many wars. Hmm. So what if we attack them? They're going to attack us and then we start this race war. But instead, what we decided to do was turn the other cheek in a, you know, in a very Christian way and say, hey, let's work towards peace.
And this started you on a journey into politics, right?
Yeah.
You're a filmmaker, right?
Absolutely. After that documentary, you know, I came to face-to-face with a number of congressmen, number of senators, and started to realize that the problem is far deeper than meets the eye. It's systemic. It's the governance of our whole nation. It's the idea that people become bipartisan and push far left or push far right, and then there's no middle ground, and people are battling even rhetorically on the Hill and shutting down the government, which affects all of us economically, but they don't have to live with it. They don't have to go to the inner city. We come from the inner city. They don't have to go there. And so that's what launched me into this idea or a thought process of maybe running for a seat. And then I was asked several times for a state assembly seat from both sides. And I just thought to myself, I would rather do something nationally. And that's the seat came about. It could be one of the 17 that gets flipped. Originally, it was not thought to
be. You're talking about Congressman Paul Ryan's seat.
Yeah. It originally wasn't thought to be a flippable seat.
Right.
But in the R3 region, when the polling came back, people started looking at it and saying, well, if it's only 3 percentage points lead to a Republican, and other ones are 5, 10, 12, mm-hmm. I mean, who can we put there? And who can run this? And I raised my hand a couple of times.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the very polarity and dysfunction from partisanship and ultra-partisanship is manifested in the primary system. And, you know, if you're a Democrat, then in a curious way, the best thing that happened to the Democrats is the civil war within the Republicans between the Tea Party and the traditional Republicans. And it plays out in the primary process. But you're entering that very same primary process on the Democratic side, right?
I am.
And what's your sense then of how you, as you're not white,
I'll be the first.
You're not Christian. You're not a gun-toting deer hunter. Right? Not that there's anything wrong with that. Mm. Most people in Wisconsin are. I'm just trying to paint a picture here of an uphill battle.
Oh no, it's definitely uphill. We are hunters. We hunt. Tigers in India, and we hunt deer in India, like our ancestry. So we're very well versed in guns, and coming from an Army ROTC background where they would make me the point man with my M16, I had some training, you know. And so I'm not gun-toting, let's say that. And, of course, I've fought for gun legislation, which I think every American should fight for, because illegal guns are what we're all fighting, right?
And well, also the intersection between mentally ill people and easy access to firearms. That is the pathology, the diagnosis behind all of these mass shootings. Almost without exception, you find at the end of the day, that's what you find it's about.
And
that is one of these most outrageous things that the NRA are blocking.
It seems to be because everybody thinks there's a slippery slope on legislation, where if you just pass one, it's going to change everything. But I venture to show people, and the American government is not moving that fast on anything. Let's look at, you know, pro-life versus pro-choice. It takes us 40 years, Roe versus Wade afterwards, and we're still arguing the same thing. Nothing is going to slip and change that fast. It is an uphill battle in the primary and in the general in Wisconsin District 1, because you're right, I'll be the first person that's not white to even run in that district. I'll be, though we're very religious, I'm not Christian. Mm-hmm. And candidates usually, especially Paul Ryan, that's what he does. He can speak at pulpits. He can speak.
He does, and he claims to be a very devout Catholic. At the same time, I've interviewed Sister Simone Campbell, who led the nuns on the bus, who went to his district office and said, how can you be a good Catholic and believe in Ayn Rand's peculiar Darwinian philosophy.
I agree. I think whenever I talk to Christians, I quote, you know, Samuel 1, chapter 17 of David and Goliath. And it seems to be all of us as Americans are in this situation where Goliath is, at that time with the Philistines, you know, the Goliath was a 7-foot guy. For us, Goliath is all these negative things that are coming out of all our society, and whether it be warring or the, you know, prison system, how tough it's gotten, whether it be a lack of education or trying to focus on it. But essentially, I believe that all of us as Americans need the David to come in the room, and that would be the people. We need the people to be represented in Congress. And that seems to be the missing aspect right now.
Well, isn't that largely because the Congress has been taken over by money?
You know, it's largely because
you're going to have to raise money, right?
I'm going to have to raise a lot. I'm going to have to. He's already sitting on probably $2 million around there from just the last campaign.
$70,000 plus from the Koch brothers.
Oh, yeah, the Koch brothers, the Koch brothers. So the money, you got to think of it like this. In 1972, the middle class made a certain amount of money. Now, 2012, we all know the middle class is making less and less money when you take into all these accounts, the inflation rate, the healthcare costs, everything else. We're making far less than we ever have been. Essentially, then, campaign finance has skyrocketed. So how can somebody from the middle class actually go to Congress to represent that idea? So trade unions are going to be attacked, which they are, especially in Wisconsin. Education is going to be attacked because who uses education? Who uses public education? I'm a product of public education. We grew up in the inner city and we were given government housing and we got, you know, free lunch and we got a little bit of welfare support. And these middle class ideals, which equal and level the playing field, that's what we need to protect.
So we started out, of course, talking about Nelson Mandela, who, you know, can't turn on the television or hear the radio without eulogies, which all of which are well-deserved. But there was, of course, an interesting role for South Africans of Indian descent, not the least of which was the Gandhi himself. And they were under that kind of Nazi system of apartheid. They were in the colored category. And then, of course, when the South African government started to trade a lot with Japan, and they had to figure out were the Japanese white or colored. So they decided that the Japanese were white, but the Chinese were colored.
That was the dividing line. I was just in South Africa, I think, 2 years ago. And Mandiba, I went to Soweto, and I went to go see his house, and it brings you shivers to see how middle class and lower class he was, but how powerful he became after such a long battle. And the Gandhi connection is very apt, and not many people do know that he studied law school and became a lawyer in South Africa and then moved back to India. And with this idea, he saw the racism and the apartheid movement and thought of it, oh my God, it's India. It's a mirror. Mm-hmm. And that same classism, racism still exists all around our nation or all around our planet in different ways, you know. So Mandiba, like Mandela, he's, to this day, like when you go to South Africa and you see those big statues of him, I mean, he's larger than life. Mm-hmm. And though he's died, I think he'll live on in all of our practices.
And again, I'm joined in the studio by Amardeep Kaleka, who is an Emmy Award-winning film director who, following his father's murder at the Wisconsin Sikh Temple in 2012, became involved in gun control and new legislation, and he's running for the United States House of Representatives to unseat Representative Paul Ryan in Wisconsin's 1st District. Back to the issue of gun control in the last couple of minutes here, Amar, tell me, this is talk about an uphill battle. I mean, you had all of that momentum. The president was told not to go near it. The Democrats had decided not to touch this issue. Yet President Obama was so deeply upset by what happened to those school children that he felt he couldn't remain silent and really stuck his neck out, pushed it as hard as he could, and yet it went down. And it shows you that how much money and minority rule actually operates in the U.S. Democracy.
Absolutely. The NRA grading system. We just put an introduction out to Wayne LaPierre just so we can go skeet shooting together, because there's this discussion. It's not a black or white issue. It seems like when you're bipartisan, everything is black and white. And people say that the gun legislation was the tipping point. That's the button that pushed the government shutdown, because then everybody looked at each other at such a critical junction of the Constitution, and then they wouldn't cross over on sides. Now, with gun legislation, I mean, as Sandy Hook's one-year anniversary approaches, and they're going to have a big event in D.C. Coming up for it, as it approaches, I think we all need to understand and comprehend we're fighting illegal guns. Nobody is fighting to take the guns out of legal hands. We understand if you live, 100 miles away from another city and you have to protect your land, that's different. You've probably have, filed the proper paperwork and done everything.
But let's face it, you don't need to protect your land in the 21st century. I mean, indeed, when Native Americans were massacred, arguably there were other ways to deal with that. The white people were actually stealing the land. But, that's the part of it that I want to get a handle on this. And since I come from a different culture, where in Australia, if manly men get into a fight, the last thing they do is pull out a gun. It's considered the most abject act of cowardice.
Absolutely.
Why is it in our culture that guns are considered heroic and manly and the way to settle problems?
Simple. military-industrial complex. This nation was founded 200 years ago on warring and building guns and selling them and selling cannons and tanks and all these things. And the gun sales, capitalism in general, me and you both know if you plant a seed of certain capitalistic, let's say, invention, if it's a bicycle or if it's a car, it's going to grow. And so America, because it founded the idea or the usage of this many guns, you know, to fight, let's say, the Native Americans or fight different colonial rule or these types of things.
And then, of course, the Maxim machine gun was invented in America, the Gatling gun.
The Gatling, yeah. And there's guns that we will never see, you and I, you know, Department of Defense guns that you and I will never even touch or even hear about that get sold to a faraway nation. And that simple thing can be curbed by Congress, can be curbed by D.C., because it's our money, it's our taxpayer money that goes there.
But what about the psychological aspect? What about changing the young boys? And the movie industry here is culpable, and so is the television business in terms of every TV series is just endless guns and these silly little women holding big guns that supposedly be FBI officers.
Well, just remember that, you know, even when people product place Coca-Cola, there is a certain amount of influence in Hollywood from people who have money that are gun salesmen, you know, and sometimes that's our own government. Sometimes that's just capitalistic people who are quite intelligent at making money.
I see. Well, that's true. The NRA is actually the lobbying group for the arms and ammunition manufacturers.
I'm glad you said it. I couldn't.
Well, you better. I mean, you got to win over those deer hunters.
Yeah, well, I love deer hunting. So we're gonna go after. We're gonna do some skeet shooting tournaments and definitely go after some deer.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely, thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Amardeep Kaleka, who is an Emmy Award-winning film director who, following his father's murder in the Wisconsin Sikh temple shooting of 2012, became involved in gun control and new legislation to reduce hate crimes. He is running for the United States House of Representatives in Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District to unseat Representative Paul Ryan. This has been a special compilation of Background Briefing from 2013. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.